Hi, everybody. We're live.
I have to tell you, I'm having a sad.
Oh, what's going on?
First of all, I have a cold, which is why I sound funny. So let me just get that out right in front of everything. But
me too, sort of.
But it's summer. Sort of. You're not supposed to have a see.
Yeah, my daughter came down with something right before she's going to go to school, and she decided to give it to everybody. So anyway, here we are.
Similarly, my daughter went to school and shared all those germs with all of us, which is delightful.
School is the source of all germs, especially indeed. Like when young children go to school for the first time, like preschool or kindergarten.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's where all viruses come from. But, you know, certainly it doesn't get that much better as they get through the older grades.
Yeah, no, that's so true. So I'm having a sad because I had a really solid plan for a light redesign of call sheet for iOS 26. And the gist of it is that I was going to move to the system. In SwiftUI, it's dot searchable, but the system search box and search affordances, mm-hmm. which I am not using in call sheet because you couldn't put them at the bottom of the screen until very recently. And then I forget why I didn't do it after that, but I think there was very little control over whether or not it was focused for a while. They've been chipping away at all these problems over the years, but I've been over the last few days, because I've been real late on starting my work on this because of all the things going on in my life, which everything's fine, but it's been a lot. And so I'm really dug in the last few days. I was feeling really good. Like the direction in my mind, I'm feeling great about. I really think that this is going to be awesome. I'm going to use the system search affordance at the bottom of the screen. And the only problem with that is, as you navigate into sub screens, you got to like kind of quietly like re-scaffold a new one of those, because each individual screen, each individual view wants to have its own. You can't, there's no real idea of a universal search box, but I was like, okay, I think I can get this. And then as I'm like starting to do the thing that no one should ever do, is I'm starting to try to bend SwiftUI, and I'm bending it. And today
SwiftUI bends about as well as Tim Cook.
Exactly. And so today I'm pretty sure I heard a crack, and that was SwiftUI breaking. And so I'm having a sad because I really think if I could have done this, and before everyone emails, like, yes, I could probably do this in UIKit, but I just simply don't have the interest in it. And I was at best a proficient UIKit developer, but all of that has atrophied in the last few years. And I'm sure I could figure it out if I really dedicated myself to it. But I think instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a stab at doing a tab bar based version of call sheet. So, because that does, to my recollection, and I have to look into this again, that does have somewhat of a concept of a universal search, but I've heard a lot of the discourse, the capital D discourse, that tab bars are a disaster in iOS right now. So I got to throw some spaghetti against the wall and see what's going on. But it's frustrating because I really didn't know what I was going to do about iOS 26 and Liquid Glass. And then in working with Ben McCarthy a little bit, they had given me some really great tips. And a lot of these ideas, as most good UI ideas for me anyway, came from Ben. And I really thought that this was going to be great. And what would happen is, you know, you would have universal search at the bottom of the screen always, and there was going to be a little button to the right of it that would toggle between universal search and searching on only that screen, because there is an affordance for that today in call sheet, but nobody ever sees it because you got to drag down a little bit so that the title comes down the screen a little bit. And then there's like a second search bar at the top of the screen, which is the system way of doing it, but it's a little clunky and nobody ever knows it. And so I get feedback email, not irregularly. Hey, I wish I could search within this one screen. Well, you can. Well, what? How do you do that? Well, you got to, et cetera, et cetera. So, I was really, really amped and really, really jazzed, and I really, really, really was excited, and now I'm sad because I don't think I can do it, or really, I don't think I can make SwiftUI do it, and that makes me sad. But what's your situation? I am caught up on Under the Radar. You were in the depths, as I currently am, apparently, and you decided that you were going to back off a little bit, which is probably where I'm going to land. I'm just walking down the path that you have laid for me a little bit slower, but where are you today? Because you were optimistic last time I heard. Is this still true?
It has been a ride.
Yes.
So I started out the summer thinking, well, I'm going to really do a very significant redesign of Overcast, including, I thought, I should have universal search using this new universal search system component.
This doesn't sound familiar at all.
Right. And I thought I should switch to a tab bar structure because that's kind of, you kind of need one to make that work well. And I thought, you know, now's the, I even set it under the radar. Now's the time for Overcast to become a tab bar app.
That's where I am right now. I probably won't be in a week, but that's where I am right now.
So that's where it started. And then, you know, how it started, how it's going. Joke.
Yeah.
So it quickly became apparent to me over the early experiments with tab bar stuff in the summer. It quickly became apparent, like, oh, this isn't really going to work the way that I want it to. And it turns out that trying to get Overcast to use the new, you know, the new Liquid Glass tab bar design was both not a great fit for Overcast, and also the new Liquid Glass tab bar design has been a buggy mess for most of the summer. So it quickly became apparent, like, oh, I not only is this not a great fit, but I can't even really build against this reliably. And then it became, okay, let me kind of try doing my own thing. And I tried to, and everything I was trying the tab bar stuff, I hated it. I tried doing my own thing that was just navigation bars, but, you know, using, you know, pulling in some of the corners and making the mini player float so it looks kind of like one of those big floating blobs like the music app and podcast apps have, but just without the tab bar, which is that is roughly what I'm going to be shipping. Spoiler. But, you know, stuff like that, I was just hating the app as I would adopt it to Liquid Glass. And I was in a bad place, and that, you know, two under the radars ago was when I was in the bad place. Like, it was just like, I was hating everything I was doing. I was questioning, like, should I even adopt Liquid Glass at all? But, you know, I also then came around to the idea, like, well, you know, it's people who are going to be mad about it are going to be mad for a little while, and they're probably not going to be the majority of people. And that, you know, subset of people will only get smaller over time. Meanwhile, most people will adopt it and they'll think it looks cool, and, you know, I'll be the, you know, the old man screaming and, you know, get off my lawn. So it's like, it's not productive for me to say I'm just not going to do it. Then, so I started finally getting to a place where I'm like, all right, here, the things I'm doing now, it's a smaller, it's not a redesign, it's more of a visual refresh of certain screens to make them a little bit, you know, more using of the system components so that it looks more glassy. System toolbars, replacing, like, you know, some of the big rows of buttons and stuff like that. And that was going fine until 2 days ago when Beta 8 dropped.
Oh, no.
And this has been a really rough summer in terms of bugs. And it's hard when you're developing because it's like, you know, when you're building against a certain system component or system behavior and it's buggy or it causes animation bugs or it causes layout bugs, you can file those bugs and, you know, look at the sky, spin in a circle, whatever you think might get them fixed. For the most part, Apple is randomly and occasionally fixing bugs, and then sometimes randomly and occasionally unfixing them in subsequent betas. So Beta 8 came out a couple days ago, and so many of my behaviors got, like, a little bit worse. Like, little animation bugs, little, like, state or layout bugs that weren't there in previous betas. And this is probably, we're probably very close to the GM build. The GM build is probably the next build. Or at least we are so close that it might as well be. Which means any bug you see in this beta at this point has a pretty good chance of shipping to customers as 26.0. So I am, like, I'm to the point now where I'm like, I made my app more modern in a lot of ways, better in some ways, not better in all ways, if I'm honest, and I'm just dreading the user reactions, because I think my app looks pretty good as an iOS 26 app, but again, not everyone's going to like that look. I've also made the probably decision that when I adopted things to iOS 26, I also have backported those layout changes to iOS 18. I don't know if that was the right idea yet. And maybe I won't even ship it. Maybe I'll just say the new version requires 26 and then 18 people will never even see it. But that would delay my launch then, because I can't really launch something requiring 26 on day one, you know, responsibly. So I'm at a point now where, like, I have a lot of self-doubt. I was expecting to get this into test flight on Monday, and then the beta 8 came out and it broke everything. I'm like, well, now I can't. Now I'm back into the workshop again. You know, like I can't ship it in beta yet. And I've been working on those fixes, you know, for the last couple of days. And it's still, there's still so many weird little layout bugs and little animation bugs. I'm having to rip out components. I'm having to undo. I'm having to comment out iOS 26 changes here and there just because, like, it's not shippable yet. And I don't know when it'll be shippable. You know, the scaled back version, you know, I'll hit it on day one. Like, I'll get something out there. But it's not anywhere near what I wanted to do. And it's not anywhere near what I... It isn't even near my scaled back version because I had to, you know, comment out so much of it because of these bugs. Maybe the GM will fix them. Probably not, if I'm guessing, or at least won't fix all of them. So it's going to be kind of a rough fall. And again, terrified of the customer reaction because either way, I'm screwed. If I don't adopt Liquid Glass, I'll get a lot of negative reviews and negative press for being old, unmaintained, outdated, stale-looking, whatever it is. But if I do adopt Liquid Glass, then I'm going to get a lot of negative reviews from people who just don't like it. So this is a rough summer for iOS development. It's very discouraging. At this point, the only motivation that keeps me going through all this is... At the beginning of the summer, when I was waiting for the design to firm up, I worked on some feature underpinnings for some future features that I'm very excited about, but none of those features are shipping yet because I had to spend the latter two-thirds of the summer fighting Liquid Glass. And that's exactly what I said would happen when the rumors were of a redesign. I said this spring, I said, most apps will be able to just do the redesign, and most feature work will have to wait for a while because a redesign's a big deal and it's a ton of work. That was right. Like, Casey, how many new features have you been able to add to Call Sheet this summer that were not design related?
A couple because I wasn't working on the design. And now and it's my own fault because now I feel like I am on my heels with regard to the design because I let myself get distracted with a couple of new features, which was probably not very adult or mature of me, but I needed it to keep my, you know, morale, for lack of a better word, up.
I did the same thing. I just didn't ship them yet because they're not done yet.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, everything is fine. It's just, it's frustrating and it's tough and it feels like everything is out of your control. And I mean, and then the other tough thing is, you know, what can we do about it? Well, we can talk about it on the show. We can file radars, but I mean, the radars that I've filed are right. The radars that I've filed, the best I've gotten out of the radars that I've filed is, oh, we recognize that as our problem. We will fix it one day, which is better than nothing for sure. And I'm very lucky to have gotten any response at all.
Yeah.
But a user-facing bug that I can't reasonably work around and the response is, we'll get to it one day, not reassuring.
No, because so, you know, Apple's on fire, too. Like, there were, you know...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't even imagine what's going on inside of Apple right now trying to get these releases out the door on time for the iPhone ship date. Like, it's got to be total mania over there right now. But, you know, again, this is a problem they created. This is a problem that their leaders foisted upon them. So it's you know, it's hard to feel a lot of sympathy for the company as a whole. I do feel sympathy for the individual teams who had Liquid Glass shoved into their, you know, their timelines and they had to just deal with it. I do feel bad for them, but the leadership, I think they earned this problem with their poor decision making. Like, Liquid Glass should not have shipped this year. It's so rough. It's so incomplete. Even setting aside like design choices and maybe thinking that the choices should have, you know, had more iteration, setting that aside, just the technical part of it, like, it is not in a great state right before it's shipping to customers. So it's my goal, my hope is that I can get my 26, you know, design refresh out there in a couple of weeks, and it's hopefully not too much bug fixing and work on that in the weeks after that, so I can then actually get back to working on features that people actually will probably like. Because I'm really excited about doing feature work. I am not at all excited about dealing with this BS. But this is the nature of development. Sometimes Apple gives you a whole bunch of work in the summer that you have to kind of just grind through. And because if you don't, your customers will be upset. But it's not really moving the app forward. It's just, you know, shuffling deck chairs.
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm, like I said, I'm behind where Marco was. I guess I'm two episodes back in under the radar, and I'm sad about it. But I'm sure both of us will come through on the other side, and we might have a few bruises, maybe a scar or two, but we'll come through it. But for those of you listening, I beg of you, for all of the apps on your phones and your devices and whatnot, please be gentle. Be gentle, yes, and be understanding. For the love, please do what you can to be gentle.
And you know what? Go out there. Leave a nice review for apps that you like. Like, because most people never review what they're using. Most people, I'm the same way. I hardly ever review anything. We just kind of use the stuff we use, and we never even think about leaving a review. So the only people who leave reviews usually are people who are like really excited and really mad, and no one else. So if you're not one of that kind of personality type, and you just quietly use stuff like I do, go out there and just, like, every day review a new app that, like, that you've, an app on your phone that you're like, hey, you know what? I do like this app. This is a nice app. I use this regularly. You know, go leave it a review in the App Store. You know, it very much does help. And it's nice to give developers a bit of a present right now, because I think we're all, you know, running around doing a lot right now and heading into a potentially very bumpy fall.
Yeah. All right. On a happier note, mostly, it is almost, as we record this, almost September, and we're just super excited and getting a little bit ahead of things. And we're going to tell you that September is, guess what? Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. And so that means we are joining our friends at Relay, which is ourselves. I don't know. Just go with me on this. We are joining our friends at Relay, and we are doing another fundraiser for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So here's the thing. St. Jude, before it opened in 1962, childhood cancer was pretty much considered incurable. And today, thanks in no small part to the money that you have given to St. Jude and that St. Jude has spent on research and development, now more than 80% of U.S. childhood cancer patients survive, which is incredible. Additionally, St. Jude is willing to and does take in some of the world's most sick children in order to help them and hopefully cure them. They do this regardless of their race, ethnicity, beliefs, or perhaps most importantly, ability to pay. Maybe that doesn't matter to you because you're not American, but for us poor Americans, that makes a big difference, because having a child with a catastrophic illness like this can not only bankrupt your life, but bankrupt you financially. And that's just no fun. It's no fun for anyone. So as we do every year, we are going to call this to your attention for today and in the month of September. And we are going to ask of you to please scrape together whatever money you can and send even just $5 to St. Jude. You can do that at stjude.org/ATP, stjude.org/ATP. Now, we're going to talk later about how Apple has announced when the iPhone keynote announcement will be. Marco, if one is in the mood and in if somebody is going to be buying a new phone this year and feeling really guilty about that rampant consumerism, what can one do to offset that?
What a great question, Casey. I'd be happy to talk about that right now. What a surprise that you're asking me this question. I've never thought about this before, but I'm just going to come off the cuff here. I think you should consider that in this fall season, in a mere couple of weeks, Apple will be announcing new products that you want to buy. Now, if you are, you know, if you've done well in life, you have a little bit of extra money, and you might be looking at the new iPhones or the new Apple Watches or the new AirPod Pros that are likely to be released in a couple of weeks. And you might think, you know, my AirPod Pros still work, but boy, those new ones look great. My iPhone,
yep.
My iPhone still is fine. You know, it still functions. But man, that new iPhone is so compelling. I want it so badly. But I just feel so much guilt about spending money on something I don't need. Well, let me tell you, nothing cures guilt like donating to a charity. You can do whatever you want, and if you donate to a charity afterwards, you're guilt-free. So, here's what you do. You go buy that iPhone. You go buy those AirPods. Enjoy them. You work hard for your money. You deserve happiness and new electronics and consumerism and, you know, wasteful, you know, anti-environmental, just purchasing all sorts of new stuff that you don't need. You deserve it. And the way you deserve it is by taking the amount of money that you spent in total from the base price of the iPhone, whatever you added on top of that for sales tax, shipping, Apple Care, cases, storage upgrades, different tiers of the phone, you know, bigger screen size, whatever it is. Take the total, subtract the base price for that iPhone family. That difference is the Marco offset. So what you do is that Marco offset, the difference between what you actually splurged on and the base, the minimum that you could have spent, that difference is your minimum donation to St. Jude. So what you do is you enjoy your iPhone, and when you get that charge, you see, you do that subtraction, and you go to stjude.org/ATP. And you consider at least that amount of a donation. If you can do more, great. But that's a nice minimum. So, you know, for a typical iPhone purchase, if you, you know, maybe you get like the second or third storage tier up, maybe you get a case, you're probably at a couple $100. That's a nice minimum donation to consider. If you're able to spend that money on an iPhone this fall, let's be honest, you probably don't need it. But if you're willing to spend that, you can easily spend a couple $100 to help St. Jude cure childhood cancer. Like, it's really hard to find an example of better uses of charitable money. You know, they exist. Like, it's, you know, the world's full of great people doing great things, but this one is a really great cause, and it's, you know, well supported by, you know, a lot of, you know, people looking at it and stuff. Like, it's a great cause. It's really hard to argue with this cause. So take that few $100 or whatever your Marco offset is. That's your minimum suggested donation. And if you can do more, great. If you can't do that much, but you can do some, that's great too. You know, not everybody can actually do it. We know that. But whatever you can do, we'd appreciate it.
Exactly. And you know what? It would be incredibly convenient if there was a bespoke website exactly for... Oh, wait, there is themarcooffset.com. This was not made by us, but it is incredible. You can go to themarcooffset.com and figure it out. And after you calculate your Marco offset, let me remind you, you go to stjude.org/ATP to donate. John, we have kind of been bogarting the show. Do you have anything to add before we move on to your favorite, which is follow-up?
Yeah, we'll be doing our donations probably next week because we didn't get our acts together soon enough. And technically, it's not September, so I'm going to give us a pass on this one. But I was just thinking about when Marco was describing his thing. Our donation is kind of like the Syracuse offset because it's like you take the base price of a Mac Pro and subtract it from what I spent on my Mac Pro system, and that's how much we're going to donate. But we'll talk about that next week. Anyway, our donations are incoming. We will hope to lead by example, as many of our listeners have done through these many years. People have donated just huge amounts of money to St. Jude. We hope this year will be just as successful as last year. So please give what you can. You'll be hearing from us throughout September.
Yeah, and just to wrap this up, I will be, or at least the plan is for me to be at the Podcastathon, which is Friday, September 19th, starting at 12 p.m. Eastern. It will be myself and all the usual suspects and Brad Doughty as well. But here's the thing, one last time, stjude.org/ATP. Their tagline for this year is absolutely great. Help give these kids more tomorrows. stjude.org/ATP. All right, let's do some follow-up. We talked last week, and now I'm having another sad. We talked last week about how there was some evidence that maybe there would be cellular Macs. Marco and I were doing the happy dance together. We celebrated together. And then an anonymous person wrote in and said the following regarding Felipe Esposito's articles at Macworld about possible cellular Macs. I've seen the same code as he's seen, and I don't see cellular Macs. What I saw were Macs with Apple's Wi-Fi and Bluetooth chip, but no cellular. I also saw no evidence of an M4 Ultra existing at all, even though the leaked code has all chips up until the M6 lineup. In case you're curious about the origin of these rumors, Apple ships KDKs, kernel development kits, for all builds of macOS. And the one for macOS Beta 26 Beta 4 included all the freaking make files they used to build kernels for all their devices. They shipped it and took it down fairly quickly, but the damage was done. Whoopsie doopsie.
See, you should learn from my example. Remember how excited you guys were about the cellular Mac rumor or whatever, and then you mentioned the M4 Ultra thing, and I'm like, you know, whatever, show it to me. See, when you've been burned as many times as I have about Mac Pro rumors, they just roll right off you. It's like, it just doesn't affect me at all. I don't care until they actually ship something. But you got all excited, and maybe there was nothing to be excited about.
Yeah, indeed. All right. And then a different anonymous person with regard to accidental Siri activations. We don't give awards to ATP feedback. This might get my award for the most bold feedback we've ever gotten. So with that in mind, anonymous writes, I wanted to bring up something you have hopefully not experienced, but I sure have. I've started taking my Apple Watch off and putting it on my phone in a drawer when I'm having alone time with my partner. If you get my drift, nothing kills the mood quite
everyone
like your watch
gets
piping,
your drift.
Like your watch piping up and saying, I didn't quite get that. And while you're otherwise athletically engaged, and if that were the worst of it, I probably wouldn't complain. But sometimes the responses are far more awkward. The worst part is that I 100% want my intimate aerobics to count toward my exercise totals, but not at the expense of ending up in a virtual three-way with Siri. I can only just laugh at how modernity has invaded upon the most basic actions of human life. Again, just well done. Absolutely beautiful.
How long do you think before Apple adds that to the workouts app?
I believe that's called play,
I mean,
John.
There is an indoor other.
but why does it have to be indoor? Free your mind, Marco.
I think in this case, listener, I think you got to just give up those numbers. I think go take a walk outside.
But
afterwards.
They've got it in a drawer, and it's still like waking up and interrupting. So maybe it just needs to be in like a little soundproof chamber, or like in another room.
Or also, well, first of all, yeah, like is it when you take it off your wrist, it locks. Does it respond to Siri activations when it's locked?
Well, it's the phone too. It's the watch and the phone.
Oh yeah, the phone would do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say consider. Again, for reducing accidental activations, consider turning back on the word hey as part of the hail phrase. That helps reduce accidental activations. Or whatever Apple device that you think you don't necessarily need the voice hailing on, turn it off. Because not only does that reduce this problem, but it also makes it more reliable when you say, hey, thing, do something. It makes it less likely that the wrong device will respond. It's useful to like minimize the number of devices that are even listening for it. And then within those devices, turn on the hey, and it'll reduce that. But, maybe consider putting the phone further away. Like, you're not going to, look, what's going to happen? It's going to vibrate. Are you going to want to look at it? Like, or are you going to want to keep doing what you're doing?
Well, maybe you want it to vibrate, Marco. I couldn't say it with a straight face.
As soon as I said vibrate, I realized, oh, man.
I'm such a child.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I think, let these stats go. You don't need those stats. You can take a walk and you'll be fine. Like, you can let those stats go. And maybe consider keeping the devices further away.
I think, yeah, the real issue is just keeping the devices further away. It's less about the stats and more about the, I didn't get that. But that's okay. Marco and I were being sad earlier. We were sad earlier. Are you sad, angry? Show me how you feel on this chart. Are you sad or angry with AppleCare 1 right now?
I don't know. I'm feeling better than I was last week because I feel like this whole issue was resolved. To review, AppleCare 1 is the new warranty bundle thing that Apple has that is incredibly ill-conceived and that allows you to put multiple devices on a single monthly payment for AppleCare. But only if those devices belong to a single Apple ID, which is very limiting. And they will harass you and give you 24 hours notice via email if they detect any of your devices seem to not be on the Apple ID that they expect. And they will cancel your coverage and refund you, leaving your thing without coverage if you do not take some action within 24 hours. So that's the terrible system that the AppleCare 1 is. I tried to sign up for it. Apple suggested that I sign up devices that don't belong to me, and I did, and then it pulled them off. And then I had devices that all belonged to me, and they still kept pulling one off. So as I said I would, I eventually spent one morning just talking to Apple support and trying to get this resolved, and I did. Here is the resolution. They said that they looked up in their database of known issues or whatever, that the thing I was experiencing, which is we have a Mac here that has multiple accounts on it, and it kept getting yanked off AppleCare 1. They said, oh, yeah, that's a known issue. The only current workaround is to not use your Mac like that, as in don't have more than one account on your Mac.
I believe
so that's not gonna
you're
work
holding
me.
It wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of when I posted about this on Mastodon, some people were saying, so they shipped it with this known issue. That's usually not what known issue means. It usually means they shipped it, weren't aware this was a problem, but then very quickly they realized it was a problem because they work in support and you get the same complaint. On that subject, again, my very nice support person, speaking for themselves only and not for Apple, said that they believe that AppleCare 1 will probably have to be changed because the current support volume on the AppleCare support line is unsustainable. I didn't have the heart to tell this person that I'm not sure Apple cares that your support volume is unsustainable, because presumably they chose the structure of AppleCare 1 because they feel like that's the most financially viable, because the more devices you allow someone to put into a bundle, the more money they save and the less money Apple makes on AppleCare. That's the only reason I can think of why they would try to confine AppleCare 1 to a single Apple ID as opposed to allowing it to be used by an entire family, which would make much more sense, which is exactly what the support person said. They're like, I don't know why they didn't put it on family. Again, I didn't have the heart to explain to him. Money. Money is the reason. Anyway, I don't have any faith that they will change this plan, because the fact that they shipped this shows that they don't have enough brain cells to rub together about what makes a good AppleCare 1 plan. Anyway, so what's my solution? The solution offered to me by the helpful support person was cancel AppleCare 1 and then sign up for plain old AppleCare Plus individually on all your devices. And I asked, will I be able to sign up for the plans that I had before AppleCare 1? And the answer was no, because first of all, Apple no longer offers a bunch of plans that don't have theft and loss protection, and those plans used to be cheaper. And second of all, things like my 2-year prepaid upfront AppleCare on my 1-year-old phone, I can't get those at all in any form. Like, that's the cheapest way you could get 2 years of coverage on phone, because I change my phone every 2 years. When I re-signed up for AppleCare on my phone, I had to go to the more expensive monthly plan with theft and loss, that's, you know, so on and so forth. So the upshot is I canceled AppleCare 1. I'm out of the AppleCare 1 business. It is turned off everywhere. I got refunded for it. And then I re-signed up for regular AppleCare at higher prices than I was paying before, to the tune of an additional $48.03 per year that I am now paying. And I'm paying that to cover one fewer device, because to save money, I left my iPad off AppleCare. Used to have AppleCare with the prepaid plan. Now it no longer has AppleCare, because otherwise it would have been that I was losing $68.03 per year. So this entire fiasco has been a learning opportunity for me and hopefully for you. My advice is that no one should sign up for AppleCare 1. And you may be thinking, well, what if I don't have multiple accounts? What if I'm a single person living alone? I have all my devices belong to me. It's so buggy that I have a feeling that even in those situations, there could be problems. And here's the thing. If there's any kind of problem, they send you an email and you have 24 hours from the time they sent the email, not the time you read it, to do something to remedy the situation. Otherwise, you lose AppleCare coverage. So many situations where people could be like, it's like a device that they left somewhere, or they went on vacation and they come back, they don't have warranty coverage, or they go on vacation and aren't checking their regular email and the thing gets pulled off warranty and they drop it in the water. Like, a warranty plan should not be designed like this. I recommend that nobody do this. But if you insist on doing it, be sure that you do not have any devices that more than one Apple ID ever signs into. And that includes any Mac with multiple accounts. Even if they're all, quote unquote, your account, like you have a developer Apple ID and a regular Apple ID, that would screw it up. That would run afoul of this. So, yeah, and I really hope that nice support person is right, that the unsustainable support load of AppleCare 1 will cause Apple to change the plan. And if they do, you'll hear about it here. But it'll take a lot for me to go back onto this plan, considering the thing that was supposed to save me $18 a month is now costing me $48 a year, more than I was paying before. Oh, and the thing that they offered me to make up for this bad situation was I can pick any accessory from the Apple online store for $200 or less. That more than makes up for the difference that I'm losing on this, which is nice of them, but I don't really need any accessories right now. My wife picked out a Mophie 3-in-1 charger, but it's out of stock. So I'm not sure what we're going to do on that, because they said, well, you can wait for it to come back in stock, or you can pick something else. Maybe I'll just wait until like the iPhone 17s are out and I'll buy a case with it, and the case will be like $60 instead of $200, but I'll still come out ahead for the year. Anyway, AppleCare 1, thumbs down.
So to be clear, AppleCare 1 is literally broken on your configuration, and there is no way they can put you back on the plans you had?
No, I mean, I didn't press that too hard, because I know what it's like to be in these companies. Like, I'm sure they don't have, they literally don't have a way to do it. Like, because they're,
well, they,
especially for plans that are no longer, like, what they should have just done is like, because I said, instead of letting me pick out a $200 accessory, can you just give me a $200 gift card or something? Like, I'm looking just for cash reimbursement, and they said they couldn't do that either. And also, keep in mind, it's not like the unsupportable call volume is all people with my specific weird problem with multiple accounts on Macs. The problem, you know, as characterized by the person, is that AppleCare 1 sends you threatening emails, and people get the emails, and they don't understand why. A lot of them are legitimate, as in, hey, Apple, well, not legitimate, but like, hey, AppleCare 1 suggested that I put my wife's phone on, and that should never work, and it didn't work. And it's happening to everybody there, because Apple's own thing says, sign up with these devices, and people are like, great, I'll do that. And then they get threatening emails, and then they call support. Like, that, I imagine, is a bigger problem than my specific node issue with multiple accounts on the Mac or whatever. But the whole thing is designed badly, and people don't understand how it works because it works in a way that people don't expect.
Including Apple. All right. Well, that stinks. With regard to trackpad dragging, this was your complaint, John, last time. Is that right?
It was like an AskATP of like how to use the trackpad. And I realized I had stopped using it the old fashioned way and started using it the newfangled way. But I don't like the newfangled way. So I was intentionally going back to the old fashioned way. And a lot of people had some suggestions to things that would help with my annoyance with trying to do like one finger dragging.
Right. So many people have suggested three finger drag. You can find this in system settings, accessibility, pointer control, trackpad options, dragging style, three finger drag. And what that lets you do is when you move three fingers across the trackpad, guess what? You're going to drag. I tried this and I was overjoyed. I had forgotten that this was an option. I had known at one point and I thought, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is going to be so much nicer. And then I went to flick my three fingers in order to go to a different space, because as we've covered many times on the show, I'm a devout spaces person, and I can't do that anymore because now it's a three finger drag. And yes, I know I could like rejigger the gesture, there it is, for switching between spaces. And I think the new default when you turn on three finger drag is to do a four finger drag for spaces. But I have years upon years of muscle memory for three finger drag to switch spaces. And I don't typically have a problem with dragging as it is, because I use the faux, you know, the bottom left corner, the faux button on the bottom left corner in order to do my pointing and clicking. So I did love this idea for a hot second and then immediately went right back. But John, have you tried this?
I did. I found it a little bit awkward to do at first. And like, there's also three fingers up for like app expose and stuff. There's a lot of things that want three fingers for the gesture. So there was that little bit of interference. Even though I don't use spaces, I do occasionally use like the expose three fingers up or whatever thing. But there's also drag lock in the same pop-up menu. And drag lock, I couldn't quite figure out until I read the documentation. They should have like a tooltip or something. But basically with drag lock, you double tap an item, but then drag without lifting your finger after the second tap. I did not figure this out on my own. I had to read the docs. And then dragging continues when you lift your finger. That's the thing with the three finger drag. People were saying you can three finger drag something, and if you like hit the edge of the trackpad, if you quickly pick up your fingers and move them and go, it continues the drag. And then with drag lock, it locks the drag. Like you don't even have to quickly reposition or whatever. So there's lots of accessibility options to essentially deal with the situation where you hit the edge of the trackpad during a drag. And that was one of the things I was complaining about. Or you can just use a mouse. But anyway, these options are great. Check them out. They are buried in accessibility, but they're very useful.
All right. Apple's blood oxygen feature workaround has now brought around a new Masimo lawsuit. So last week we talked about how Apple had gotten Customs and Border Protection to agree with them that, oh, well, if you're not showing the blood oxygen reading on the watch, I guess that's fine, right? And so CBP said, sure, why not? And Apple did some software updates to turn all this on, and Masimo understandably is not happy. So reading from Mac Rumors, medical technology company Masimo on Wednesday filed a lawsuit against U.S. Customs and Border Protection in which it challenged the agency's decision to allow Apple to restore blood oxygen monitoring to its Apple Watch models. In a complaint filed August 20 in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, Masimo said the Customs acted unlawfully when it ruled on August 1 that Apple can import watches with pulse oximetry technology without notifying Masimo. Masimo said it only discovered the ruling on August 14 when Apple publicly announced it would be reintroducing the pulse oximetry functionality through a software update. Masimo claims CBP exceeded its authority when it issued the ruling permitting Apple's redesigned approach.
That's the problem with talking about any of this things that have to do with like patents and lawsuits. It seemingly never ends. So there's always one more lawsuit. So anyway, the situation is still that you can buy Apple Watch products that will do the processing and display off the phone for now. But we'll be sure to let you know if that changes. But at this point, they'll still be fighting it out in court when the patents expire in 2028.
All right. Speaking of dumb things, apparently the UK's dumb demand for backdoor into Apple encryption may be going away. Jess Weatherbed at The Verge writes, the United Kingdom will no longer force Apple to provide backdoor access to secure user data protected by the company's iCloud encryption service, according to the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. This announcement follows the UK issuing a secret order in January this year, demanding Apple provide it with backdoor access to encrypted files uploaded by users worldwide. In response, Apple pulled the ability for new users in the UK to sign up for its Advanced Data Protection, or ADP, encrypted iCloud storage offering and challenged the order, winning the right to publicly discuss the case in April. Earlier this year, U.S. officials started examining whether the UK order had violated the Bilateral Cloud Act agreement, which bars the UK and U.S. from issuing demands for each other's data. With the order now reportedly removed, it's unclear if Apple will restore access to its Advanced Data Protection Service in the UK. Is anyone still there?
You got to read the BBC. The BBC bit.
Oh, all right. Well, I thought you had some commentary there. All right. Well, hello and goodbye, Future Mark. I genuinely thought that everyone died all of a sudden. Holy smokes. All right. Goodbye, Future Mark.
Bye.
The BBC adds, the BBC understands Apple has not yet received any formal communication from either the US or UK governments. Quote, we do not comment on operational matters, including confirming or denying the existence of such notices, quote, a UK government spokesperson said.
So when we talked about this, that was the part of the problem with it, is that it, like, if the UK issued this order, they would also bar Apple from acknowledging that the order exists. And so we're always like, how are we ever going to know whether this is still in effect or whether it has been withdrawn or whatever. But here we have an announcement from someone in the U.S. government. Unfortunately, announcements from people in the U.S. government, this was announced on X of all friggin' things, is not that reliable. So I was looking for some confirmation other than a post on X from an unreliable person in our current terrible government. And then the BBC does not help by saying, well, if this is a thing that happened, we couldn't tell you about it anyway. But it seems like maybe that ridiculous demand is not going to take effect, which I think is a good thing, but I can't be entirely sure, because how can you be sure about anything these days? Lots of secrecy combined with unreliability. I wish I could believe what these terrible government officials would say, and I wish there were not gag orders associated with everything having to do with this kind of thing. So I still don't feel great about this whole thing, but I think this is potentially good news.
I mean, I would hope so, because this thing that the UK wanted was pretty, pretty bananas. So if it really is going away, I think that's good for everyone involved. We shall see. All right. With regard to the Studio Display 2 and potentially having an A19 Pro chip, a couple of very interesting points that were sent to us. Daniel Luce writes, reminder that the A13 in the current Studio Display has 64 gigs of storage, which is the lowest amount of storage Apple ever bundled with an A13. The A19 Pro will be the iPhone 17 Pro's chip, and there are rumors that the iPhone 17 Pro will start at 256 gigs of storage. That's the same today as the starting storage capacity for the iMac. Oh, boy.
I joked that, like, hey, how is that a monitor with an A19 Pro? How is that not an iMac? And I said, well, you know, it doesn't have an SSD, but I forgot. Of course, it does have storage for the OS. I mean, 64 gigs isn't really big enough to be an SSD for a Mac, but it's overkill to boot whatever the heck the thing is running from the display. And yeah, if the A19 Pro has 256 gigs of storage in the monitor and the iMac also starts at 256, so what a world.
And then Fabian Hausler writes, it is possible that Apple is using differently binned chips for the display that otherwise would have gone into the bin. Apple usually only disables CPU or GPU cores on their chips for most consumer devices. On the A18 Pro, these only take up about 24% of the total chip area. If the defect occurs anywhere else, the neural engine, display controller, I/O controller, memory controller, etc., the chip would be unsuitable for a phone, but it might still be used for a display.
I do want, isn't the display used the neural engine and stuff, though, for like the center stage thing? Like, I'm wondering if it really is using, I see where they're going with this. Like, maybe there's some part of the chip that is not used at all inside the monitor, but the neural engine's probably not it. The I/O controller is probably not it. Not the memory controller. The display controller, probably not. I mean, like, I'm not sure which part you can X out, but I could imagine them using an SoC with, like, multiple GPU cores that are dead instead of just like one or whatever. So yeah, maybe reusing what would otherwise be parts that were useless does make a lot of sense.
With regard to Apple's Hide My Email feature, Timothy Martin writes, you accurately described how conventional Hide My Email works when you go to settings and create a specific Hide My Email address for use. However, if you sign in with Apple to create an account and choose to hide your email when creating that account, it has an additional benefit. It will only accept emails from domains owned or provided by the developer of that app or service or website. So if they sell or share your email, they are breached, etc., the provided email address is entirely useless to anyone else. This sounds great, right? Well, maybe not. David Beck writes, Hide My Email is such a bad idea. A while back, I got fed up with all the spam I get and decided to switch email addresses and use it for everything. Seems like a great idea until you realize it's tied to the domain it's used with. And if some other server tries to send to that address, it just silently gets discarded. There's no way for you even to see that something was blocked. Sometimes it fails immediately because the site uses separate domains for their site and for sending emails. Sometimes it'll work until one day the site changes providers. Sometimes most things will work, but certain features send from another domain.
Yeah, I think Icon Factory was complaining that one of their Kickstarters had this problem because lots of people signed up with it for Hide My Email, but then said they were never getting any of the Kickstarter emails. The same type of thing. Like the idea that when you sign up for an account on a website, that all email will come from that website's domain is not always the case, like with Kickstarter versus like the domain of Icon Factory that is running the Kickstarter, like with a platform thing, or even just plain old websites that sometimes have you sign in through one domain but land on the actual website on a different domain. And again, this like maybe would be a thing that people could deal with if they had visibility into it. Like as David points out, like the emails just get silently blocked and you just think you never see them. You have no way to go dig them out and retrieve them. You don't have a way to say, oh, and for this email, also allow this domain. It's just so non-transparent and so feature poor that it's not the type of thing that I would want to use. And we got these two things are representative of the feedback we were getting. People reminding us about the two different kinds of Hide My Email, the one that's restricted to a domain and the one that's not. And then lots of people saying they like it, but the restriction to the domains is too harsh. And other people saying I'll never use it again because it messed up something XYZ where I wasn't getting emails and I didn't realize it. So I'm not a fan, but some people do find it useful. So the more you know.
All right. So we've gotten some news that on September 9th at 1 p.m. One True Time Zone or 10 a.m. Pacific Time, there's going to be a Apple event, presumably to release the iPhones 17. I did not get an in-person invite, which is not surprising. I presume you guys did not either.
Oh, no, I'm really in with Tim right now. I'll be front row. I'll be right next to Al Gore.
Right. This was not surprising, but nevertheless, it would be fun to do that sometime. I've never been able to do that.
I would love to.
All right. So there is an interactive logo on Apple.com, which is like I think they're trying to imply it's a cool blue, like Apple logo. And as you mouse around it or click it,
I think it's supposed to look like a thermal camera. Like you ever point a thermal camera at something to see the hot parts are like go to like to red and then to white for the hottest part. And then the cool parts are black to blue.
Yep. So Sam Henry Gold wrote, I reverse engineered Apple's thermal logo effect. It's a 3.js shader that combines four inputs, a video texture heat map, a mouse driven heat map, an Apple logo mask, and a thermal style color palette.
Yeah. You can move your finger or cursor around on the Apple logo and like it's interactive and you can move around the heat thing. But yeah, the tea leaf reading for this one is I think it's mostly having to do with the rumored vapor chamber cooler on the new fancy iPhone 17s, I guess maybe just the Pro and the Pro Max, that they're actually doing something that's more significant than they have in the past to try to keep these things cool, which will be great for Casey, who's always complaining about the sun making his phone turn off. Now, I want to set your expectations, Casey. Like, I'm excited that they are doing something more than just putting some piece of metal to dissipate heat or like a thermal pad or whatever. Vapor chamber cooling sounds cool. It's it's like Marco's non-working air conditioning. It's like a phase change thing and the phase change pulls heat away from it. Right. Anyway, that'll be great, but I'm not entirely sure that's going to help with your screen thing. Like, I always feel like the phone and the sunny thing is because like the screen is essentially a greenhouse. It gathers the light and then it bounces all inside there and it overheats. It's not going to hurt. I think it will be better, maybe better than it is now. But yeah, I think you may still, if it lasts twice as long, would you be satisfied? No, you'd be like, oh, it still turns off. And now it turns off after 2 minutes instead of 1 minute. So I just want you to not get your hopes up too much. But anyway, I'm excited about the cooling stuff. The other guess was like, this has to do with the thing we're going to talk about in a second, which is like the colors of the phones or maybe the case colors or something. But I'm going with thermal imaging, which is weird, a weird thing to emphasize. The tagline is awe-dropping, instead of jaw dropping, AWE dropping. I guess they could only be talking about the iPhone 17 Air, the really thin one. Does it kind of have crappy battery life? But we'll see. This, as usual, this iPhone event, like every single thing has leaked. We'll have maybe more of an event preview next week and our traditional iPhone 16 exit interview. But for now, just be aware, September 9th, as expected.
Yeah, this looks... I'm excited. Like, the iPhone event is always... It's such a hallmark of the entire Apple year. I am not excited about the imminent release of iOS 26, as discussed earlier. Just as a developer, that's going to be a bumpy ride, but I am very excited for the new iPhones. I think the rumored iPhone Air sounds really cool, and I don't know if I'm going to want one, probably, but I don't, like, there's going to be a lot of trade-offs there, so I'm not sure.
Marco, did you see the rumor about the possible bumper case for the iPhone Air?
I did. That actually sounds really cool.
Like, I mean, I get where that rumor would come from, because for people who don't remember AntennaGate, a bumper case is a case that they still make them for phones, but it was big with the AntennaGate thing, because the iPhone 4 had a case that would, like, go around the sides only, but mm-hmm. leave the black and the back entirely uncovered. That's actually good for heating and cooling, and if you have a thin phone, that's good to, like, maintain the feeling of thinness, because if you put a case on it, suddenly it becomes thicker and it's not as exciting. So this would just make the edges thicker, but make the whole middle of the phone thin. So we'll see if that rumor ends up being true.
Yeah, I mean, in practice, I never liked the iPhone 4 bumper case. Of course, I got the free one. thanks, Steve. But I didn't like it because, it, like Apple silicone cases, it added a lot of friction going in and out of pockets. And I couldn't bear it. It was too annoying. So I just used the phone without a case, and eventually had, like, this, like, leather stick-on back that I got on it, and it was fine. In this case, it would be presumably a lot thinner than that, and we have, you know, a decade or so of materials advances, and so maybe...
I think it would still be grippy, though. Like, don't you think it would still be just as grippy?
Yeah, it would probably still be silicone, so, you know, yeah. Probably, but who knows? But anyway, that sounds fun. I'll tell you, I mean, again, we don't know anything about these phones yet, and I don't want to get too much into it now, since we'll know in, like,
we don't
week.
Know anything about these phones. We know everything about these phones. What do you want to know? Ask me a question.
Well, okay, fair. Yeah, I guess there are a lot of leaks for iPhones that almost always prove to be 100% right. But I guess I think the iPhone Air could be very interesting, because I would expect that it's going to be a lot lighter weight, and that'll just feel so good in a pocket. So I don't know. Like, I, you know, as you've heard me talk about over the years, I always get excited whenever a new iPhone is actually lighter weight than the outgoing one, which doesn't happen very often. That part of what I liked about the iPhone Mini was that it was so much lighter.
But this one's going to be it's sized between the Max and the Pro, so it's even bigger than your current phone, length and width wise, if not thickness.
Yeah. So that's why, like, it sounds interesting. I want to see what they did here. You know, the iPhone Pro, I buy an iPhone Pro every time, or almost every time, and it's great. I know what to expect from it. I don't necessarily use all the Pro features, but I like a lot of them. If the iPhone Air loses too much of the Pro-ness, then I probably wouldn't like it. One of the things I'm curious about is how they decide on 120 hertz on the screen. You know, right now, only the Pro phones have 120 hertz.
The rumor is the Air has ProMotion.
I know. See, that's the thing. Like, so are you mainly just giving up battery life and additional cameras, which are not small things by any means? Like, those are big considerations. But if that's the main trade-off, is, like, you save a bunch of weight and it feels great in the hand, maybe.
And it doesn't have the Pro SoC.
Oh, yeah. Well, but, like,
I don't think you'll care about that. Anyway.
Probably, yeah. Like, you know,
we'll see. I think you should get it and try it for the show and then return it if you don't like it.
I would probably keep it. I mean, it's, but, like,
Wait. Marco should do what, John?
Get it and try it for the show and return it if you don't like it.
How'd that work out for your Vision Pro?
What are you talking about? I never want you two with two people, two of the three bought it for the show and didn't. Uh-huh. Liked it enough to keep it, or keep it in their closet.
Prosecution rests, Your Honor.
Well, right, no. Well, where are your Mac Pros?
Oh, nobody wants that. There's literally nobody that wants
only
that.
Only one of us has to buy a Mac Pro, apparently.
Anyways, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, so anyway, I think it's going to be really interesting. We'll talk more about this once we actually know more about it, John. But but I think it'll be very interesting. I like mixing it up sometimes. Like when I did use the iPhone Mini for that 1 year that I did. But that was – I really liked the Mini. It was really cool in a number of ways. And, yeah, it was limited in many of these same ways. It had worse battery life than the bigger phones. It didn't have the Pro camera system. It didn't have, you know, some of the Super Pro features. But the difference between the Pro features and the regular features I think was a little bit smaller then. Like that was before promotion, before the always-on screen. Like do we know – does it have always-on screen?
Yeah, I think so.
So that's what I want to see with this is like how many of the Pro features does the Air have? That's the question, and we know some of those from the rumors, not all of them. We'll see. Also, how much better does the Pro camera get? You know, right now I've had the 16 Pro, the 16 Pro, been using it for a year. The 5X lens is kind of useful, and it does, and the pictures from it are pretty bad. Both of those things I kind of knew going in were very likely. Both of those things proved to be correct. If I lose the 5X lens, I'm going to have, less reach, but also those pictures are bad. So we'll see. If they make the Pro phones a lot better in those areas, maybe I would stick with the Pro phone and just get whatever the orange rumored color is, because I don't know, it looks kind of bronze to me.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. The colors are hard for the rumors to get right. And by the way, the latest breaking, and I would say kind of shaky, not maybe that reliable rumor, is that the Pro Max will have a zoom camera with a moving element, with a moving lens element inside it. And I forget what the range was. I think it was like 5X to 8X or something. Like an actual, inside the camera, a periscope lens where there's an actual optical element that moves from left to right or whatever to change it. And that would only be on the Pro Max. But I'm having a hard time buying that, but we'll see. That was like 2 days ago rumor.
Yeah, I think for me, the idea of the iPhone Air sounds really, really good. And I'm going to be so in on it. And then I'm going to see, oh, the camera system is way not as good. And that'll be me noping right out of it. Because
it doesn't even sound good to me. I don't want it to. The length and the width are more important.
Actually, that's true, too.
The size of the camera, like looking at it head on, is more important to me than the thickness. I do not want to sacrifice the battery life, and I want all those cameras. So I have no desire for the Air whatsoever. But we'll see how many other people do, because it's as Marco said, it's if you're dying for a new phone form factor, we don't get those that often. Presumably we're going to get them in the next few years with the foldable phone and the 20th anniversary phone. Like there's going to be lots of new phone form factors, and the Air is just the start of that. So if you're dying to try something new, this is a good year to check it out. But me, first of all, I'm not even getting a phone this year, but none of these new form factors appeal to me. I still like the Pro phone.
I think also one thing that might – so for me, like again, it isn't about the thinness of the Air for me probably. I think what I would notice the most about holding it would be the weight. But we don't know what's going to happen to the weight of the Pro phones either. It fluctuates a lot year to year. And
didn't they say new material? What did they say this year? Aluminum?
It's not titanium anymore. They're just using aluminum.
Yeah, which is great. Aluminum's lighter.
I would imagine the weight on the Pros is not going to be that I don't know what the rumors of that are, but I'm just guessing based on the size of the thing that it's probably going to be very similar.
So aluminum cased phones typically are lighter than the titanium ones. Also, aluminum tends to be lighter in this kind of use than glass. The back of the Pro phones is rumored to have less glass and more aluminum than it used to. So there could actually be a decent weight savings. Now, did they just spend that on more stuff in the phone?
Yeah,
maybe
bigger battery.
Right, like that's probably just spent the weight savings from the case materials on guts of the phone, which for many phones or many configurations, that probably is the right call. Like most people who use iPhones would love extra battery life, so if they can, shave a few grams off the case weight and then just make a slightly bigger battery, that's probably the right move most of the time.
That was one of the rumors, by the way, when we were asking, like, what are they going to do with that giant camera mesa that now spans the full width of the phone? Like, what are they putting under there? And the answer was that one of the possible answers was, because we don't know what the innards look like exactly, was that they're able to slide more of the battery up to where they couldn't before, because now the elements that would have been in the way of the battery can basically live in the giant camera mesa. So that would be a good use of that space. Like, what are they wasting all the space for? Other than making it so your phone is slightly less wobbly by having it go all the way across. It'll still be wobbly because the lenses still poke out on one side and not on the other. But anyway, they can use their, one theory is they use that case, use that space in the case to extend the battery further up, which would be great. Yeah, again, people love more battery life.
I would love more battery life, but more than anything else, I want better thermals. And I know you're right, John. I know you're right that the better thermals will be better, but not enough better. But
yeah,
still.
Like it's a, if you think about it, it is a really difficult challenge with the sun beating down on your phone to be able to control that with a phone that's like inside a case in your hand. It's difficult, but like maybe better screen technology, like maybe OLED will help with that. I'm not sure if maybe it'll make it worse. Actually, I don't even know how, like, dealing with the heat of, first of all, dealing with the light of the direct sun, which means that your screen has to be on like maximum brightness, which is terrible for heat. Right. And then just dealing with the heat of the sun heating up your phone. Like if you leave your phone strapped to the dashboard of your car and the sun is beating down on it through the windshield of your car, like it's a difficult challenge, but Apple doing something in this area with the vapor chamber cooling is a great step in the right direction.
Yeah, very much so. So we've also got some other leaks, speaking of things that we know nothing about, right, Marco? But we've got some
well,
other leaks.
I don't know. So this one, like, the phone rumors are solid. We've had the designs down to the millimeter. This thing you're about to read is late-breaking, and people are still expressing some skepticism about. So keep that in mind as you listen to this.
All right. So allegedly, they're reading from Mac Rumors. Apple is designing new tech-woven cases for the iPhone 17 with photos of some of the alleged case colors shared by leaker Maijin Bu. They claim that the cases will include metallic buttons for improved tactile feedback, a camera control button, MagSafe compatibility, and two small holes at the bottom for attaching a crossbody strap or accessories. The cases appear to be for the iPhone 17 Pro models that are rumored to have a horizontal camera bar given the size of the camera cutout. But Boo says the tech-woven cases will be available for all of the iPhone 17 models. It is unclear as of yet if the cases are real, but we will find out in less than a month when Apple unveils new iPhone 17 models. Let me tell you, if these are fakes, they are incredible fakes. They got me if these are fake.
Yeah, these...
So this is replacing Fine Woven, which was their terrible idea for a leather-free premium case that picked up stains and was not durable. And I look at these cases, what do you think they're made out of from looking at these pictures?
Well, I'll tell you, it looks very similar to cases that already exist on the market that have like fat, like one of the things,
like the Peak Design ones.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, the Peak Design phone cases have a like tech fabric on them that is great. It's sturdy, it looks good, it feels good, it has kind of like a weave. It here, I got my right hand over here, let me see, I'll pull it up. Yeah, like it looks very similar, honestly. Like I think the Peak Design one has a finer grain on the weave compared to
it's like fine woven.
It is finer woven. But you know, materials like that, like, you know, cloth based or fabric based materials that are strong enough to be pretty decent phone cases do exist, and they've been made by other companies for a long time. So I don't doubt that this could exist. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause on whether I think this is real or not is in the side picture where it shows the buttons. They're not aligned.
That is true.
Like crooked on like the orange one, the green, like you the buttons are a little crooked, and I've seen that on cheap cases.
I've seen that on Apple cases though, to be fair.
And
presumably these aren't production ones, but yeah, like these do look very plausible as third party cases. They also look vaguely plausible as first party, and I say that because we are in a post-fine woven world. I'm not sure I would have believed that Apple. Remember, we talked about the fine woven rumor on the show with the same kind of like unsurety about it. But not only did they nail it, they even got the name. So, and again, this is not the same source of these rumors, so I'm not giving them any more credence. But I having seen that Apple will ship something like fine woven, I can't entirely dismiss these out of hand.
No, honestly, I think, With the exception of those crooked buttons, I think these look very good and very plausible. I don't know, you know, I don't know if they're real or not, but you know, a few things jump out at me. Like number one, like the silicone, or I mean the like the rim that goes around the camera opening, that looks exactly like some of the cases Apple's made recently. The colors are current fashionable colors in Apple's current style. The general design of the case, the shape, how the fabric wraps around it. It isn't like a plastic bumper around with fabric only in the back, like what Peak Design does. It's like the fabric wraps all around so the corners can wear away for you. That's very Apple-like too. The Apple logo placement makes sense. It's probably, you know, matching the phone. It's tastefully done here. I think these are probably real. And I think if they are real, it looks pretty good, and they might actually be pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, but if they've learned from their mistakes, which one would hope Apple has, then this could show some real potential. So
I forget I got to click through to the thing to see. Do they show? I know they show it in the ones we're about to look at, but do they show the lanyard strap thing in photos here?
No.
The rumor does say that they're supposed to have lanyard strap things in the corner, and so do the next cases we're going to look at here.
Right. I didn't click through to my Jinbu's website. Let me do that real quick.
Yeah.
Nope, it doesn't look
there,
like it.
But...
No, I don't see it. All right, moving on, as John just alluded, there's also liquid silicone, which are the new silicone cases, again, by Majinbu. Allegedly, the liquid silicone cases have a soft surface velvety finish with the potential for two variants, one with a liquid glass effect, providing an opaque and satin texture, and one without this effect. It includes a rubber lanyard implemented as an integrated feature with the addition of multiple dedicated holes for attachment.
So this one does show the little corner, like, you know, two little holes where you'd thread something in and out, and presumably that's connected to something more sturdy than just a piece of silicone, because Apple silicone cases always just shred, so hopefully this has got a more sturdy frame in there. Again, questionable origins on these rumors, but it does look very Apple-ish. This is essentially just a silicone case. I've been interested in this rumor. It's been going around for like a couple weeks now. I'm interested in this rumor because of the word liquid being put into it as, you know, presumably a tie-in with liquid glass. I'm like, what is it that makes this silicone liquid silicone? How is it not just a silicone case? And the text of this summary does not give me any more information. One with a liquid glass effect providing an opaque and satin texture, and one without the effect. What? Like, is it see-through? Like, is it partially see-through? Does it have, like, swirling? Is it like hypercolor shirts where you, like, you put your hands on it, it changes color? Like, I don't, you know, I'm interested to see if assuming these are real, do they try to brand the cases to match liquid glass by putting the word liquid in and somehow making the silicone cases liquidier? Anyway, these are all closed in the bottom cases, so the only other interesting things about them is the idea of a lanyard strap, which do you remember, maybe you don't, back in the day, the iPod Touch had the little circle in the back bottom corner. You'd press it in and it would pop up like a little toadstool, and you could wrap a little string around there and then put the idea of attaching a string to your phone, I think, is more plausible now than it has ever been, given the massive popularity of pop sockets and other things like that. But I'm not entirely sure that corner is going to hold up. Like, again, especially Apple silicone cases, which are notorious for breaking apart on reentry after a few years and just having pieces of them peel off. I'm not sure I want to trust the corner of one of those cases to hold my phone, but we'll see. These are two... setting aside all the things that have been massively leaked, these case rumors, I'm always looking at askance and going, it's plausible. Like Marco said, it's plausible. The pictures look plausible, but when it comes to cases, you never know. So in a post-fine woven world, I can't rule anything out.
Also, whether they call it liquid silicone or not, I mean, it's kind of a weird name. Like, typically, you don't want to associate...
It is weird. Why would it be liquid?
Yeah, like, typically, if you see liquid coming out of any kind of plastic material, that's a very bad sign, and you should throw it away.
You don't want it to be, like, wet.
Right, exactly. But you know, sure, Apple has funny names for things sometimes. What's interesting is that if this, you know, however it is worded, maybe in a weird way through some translation, it sounds like they have, maybe, a new surface texture or a new surface finish. Maybe these new silicone cases are less pocket grippy.
Yeah. That's it. Hope springs eternal. I don't think it's good, but okay.
I mean, look, it's a stretch, I know, but they're saying it has like a new finish, a new texture. Maybe that's it. Because that has always been the biggest downside of the silicone. Like, the silicone cases are great in many other ways, but that grippiness going in and out of pockets has always held them back from a lot of people. So this could be great. Also, I think if the rumored, or if the, you know, the pictures that accompany this rumor are accurate, I think these colors look great. So I'm looking forward to, I hope this is real. I am typically caseless these days, but the Apple silicone cases, if they don't have that, you know, the major pocket friction problem, are otherwise great. So I'm kind of crossing my fingers in this one.
Yeah, silicone cases have usually come in pretty good colors. The phones don't, but the silicone cases usually have one or two really good colors. The difficulty with, like, the grippiness factor is, obviously, when it's in your hand, you want it to be grippy. When you're sliding into your pocket, you want it to not be grippy. It's hard to find that correct middle ground. If you go too slippery, I feel like it's the case will get dinged more in the court of public opinion than if you go too grippy, right? So I think that's why they keep leaning in that direction. I just wish they could make those cases not fall apart. But anyway, I don't buy them because, not because I don't like the feel, like, I actually do enjoy silicone feel like leather better, but silicone I don't mind, but they're all closed in the bottom, so I can't, they're not to my preference.
I will say that the fine woven case, or sorry, tech woven cases, the colors are good, but they're very, very muted. Whereas, as you guys have said, the silicone cases, I think, are just genuinely good colors. So we'll see what happens, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do this year. Since I've gone through like 94 screen protectors, I don't know if having a case would potentially improve that. I don't know. We'll see.
I think you should have a case.
People have been sending. People have been sending, by the way, they're saying, hey, those screen protectors are not meant to be hit from like the edge, so they're meant to be used with a case, and that would save you from shattering them. So maybe you should try that.
Yeah, but I don't want a case. Like, I know it, I know I should have one.
Don't
but...
want a screen protector then, and just deal with the scratches on your screen that you're going to put there.
Maybe. All right. With regard to the iPhone 17, or no, excuse me, 18. Is that right, actually? Yeah, I guess it is right. I didn't even realize.
The iPhone 18. 17 is old news, Casey.
My bad. Yeah, because we know everything there is to know, right, John?
Exactly.
All right. So with regard to the 18... reading from Mac Rumors, an established Chinese leaker has pushed back against recent rumors suggesting that Apple plans to eliminate the camera control button from the iPhone 18, instead claiming the company is working to simplify the component to reduce costs. According to Weibo leaker Instant Digital, the camera control's pressure-sensitive modules for the iPhone 18 series currently remain in trial production. However, Apple is reportedly removing the capacitive sensor from the current dual sensor design and opting instead to rely solely on pressure sensing to achieve all button functions. Instant Digital says Apple's revised approach is similar to designs found in devices like the Oppo X8 Ultra and Vivo X200 Ultra, where pressure sensors alone can recognize light taps, firm presses, and sliding gestures. The leaker suggests cost concerns are driving the change, noting that the current solution is genuinely very expensive for Apple and is generating costly after-sales repairs.
Yeah, so I mean, this rumor is a rumor by extension of saying camera control essentially unchanged in the 17s, but in the 18s things might be looking to cheap out. I guess this would probably have been better for next week for our exit interview for the 16. I'm not sure we'll have more to say about the camera control, but it's interesting to know that they are thinking about cutting costs there while still putting it on the 16s and apparently the 17s, and they still want it on the 18s, just if it could be a little bit cheaper, please.
Well, and I mean, that is one way to look at it, you know, the kind of cynical, like, you know, expense angle. But the way I would look at it is the camera control is way too complicated. Like, the moment it was released, we all said, this is way too complicated and fiddly, and, like, it is kind of remarkable that it shipped the way it did when that seemed to be pretty common feedback. So
and it's shipping again on the 17s.
Well, yeah, because they don't change things that quickly with the iPhone. But yeah. You know, if they took the feedback last fall to say, people don't really need all this complexity, and what really serves most of the value here is just making it a button. What it sounds like they're doing is basically making it a button.
But it's still with all the same functionality. The rumor is it will still do all the things. It just they can eliminate one kind of sensor. They used to have pressure sensor and capacitive. They said, we think we can keep all the same functionality, but just have pressure sensitive and not have capacitive.
Don't you press a little bit and like swipe back and forth? I don't know.
That's exactly what it's a rumor, but the rumor claims that they can maintain all the same functionality with just pressure sensors because they give comparisons to these phones that I'm not familiar with, the Oppo X8 Ultra and the Vivo X200 Ultra that do similar things, but maybe not. They say they support sliding gestures with just pressure. So I don't see how that could be possible, especially when you have a case over it, where like the current cases, like the one I have now, is like sort of capacitive conductance. You know what I mean? Like, it knows when I'm touching it because I'm touching the case and the case is touching the button or whatever. But, you know, it's a rumor. So we'll see how this turns out. This iPhone 18, not this year, next year.
All right. Hello, Future Marco.
Hi.
Do we have enough to say about Intel that we should wait, or are we going to keep it brief?
We should wait, because that's kind of a heavy topic. We should do Ask ATP, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Give me a second to scroll. Where's the thing? There it is. All right. Goodbye, Future Marco.
Bye.
Okay, let's do some Ask ATP, especially since we may or may not have time for it next week. Phil Hurst writes, what are the key differences between snapshots and backups? Can you rely on snapshots as backups for retaining versions and recovery of files, but obviously not as a backup against drive failure, as it's usually on the same drive? Follow-up, do snapshots change following the application of hyperspace to a disk?
So snapshot is definitely not a backup. It is just sort of a retaining of a past state of your drive on your drive. And even if macOS offers a way to manually create snapshots and then make sure that those snapshots are never deleted, which I'm not sure whether it does or not, but even if it did, I would not trust that as a backup, because as Phil noted, backups are for when you have a problem where you lose all your data, you can get it back. And one of those problems might be the failure of the volume that your data is on. Snapshots are on the same volume. So it is, you know, don't make backups on the same, putting them on the same drive mechanism is bad. Putting them on the same volume on the same drive mechanism is also bad. So yeah, not an ideal strategy. That said, I think in most normal people's encountering of snapshots, they are all temporary and may be purged by the system at any time. So it's even less of a backup if you're not finding a way to manually create and preserve them forever. And then finally, you wouldn't want to manually create and preserve them for any period of time of backups, because you're just hogging space on your main drive. You know, essentially, it's like having your backups on your drive. Now, it's not the same thing as doing a complete backup, because obviously all the parts that are in common, you'd only pay for once. But anyway, yeah, don't use snapshots as a backup. Snapshots are important to making backups. For example, Time Machine takes a snapshot and then backs up that snapshot so it has a internally consistent point-in-time snapshot of the whole disk, instead of having to start copying and then by the time it gets to the end of the copy, the disk has changed, right? So they're good, and they're a good important part of Time Machine, but they're not the same thing as backups. And as for do snapshots change following the application of hyperspace, they have nothing to do with each other. Anything you do to your disk, whether it's using hyperspace to save space, which is my app for saving space on your drive without having to delete any files, it's pretty cool. or if you're just doing work, I'm making some files, I'm moving some files around, I'm renaming things, I'm deleting things. Anything you do to your disk, that's also not changing any of your snapshots. Snapshots are frozen in a point in time. But later, when there is a snapshot, that snapshot will look different than it would have had you not made those changes. That's true of any changes. Running hyperspace, writing files, reading files, deleting files, anything you did to your disk, when you take a future snapshot, will reflect the current state of your disk. And yes, hyperspace does change the current state of your disk. So there you go.
All right, good deal. Did we get through that entire thing without you saying file system once?
Yes, we did.
Wow. Can you say it for me?
No.
My voice is...
I can't believe I didn't say it either, but you know, there you go.
You know what I've always loved to hear you say? File system and passport. File
now
system
Marco
and passport.
Get these jokes.
Yeah, see, exactly. Hooray! All right. Dan writes, why does the modern Finder take 1,000 years to move, copy, or delete batches of thousands of files? Didn't used to be this way. I've had an empty trash Finder progress window open for about 20 minutes to delete several terabytes of local data, and it's only up to 748 out of thousands of files. Even moving files to a different directory takes so long these days that I often skip to the command line to speed things up. I'm afraid to delete so much data at the command line, though, on modern macOS, because it might complicate its known inability to tell how much free space is available. What do you do, John?
So first thing I'm going to say to Dan is do not worry about doing it from the command line. It will not complicate macOS's ability to know how much free space is available. It won't make it any better, but it also won't make it any worse. So do not be afraid of doing stuff from the command line other than just, you know, fat fingering it and screwing yourself up.
Yeah. Either way, it has no idea how much free space you have.
Yeah. Like, it's not helping. It's not hurting. It is what it is. And as we've discussed in past shows, it's not like this is some kind of bug or there's some easy solution that Apple needs to implement. It's just complicated. It's just because of snapshots and all that stuff, it's just complicated to express the actual state of things to people in a way that makes sense. It was much simpler when the disk was just like, you know, you have X amount of space and Y amount of stuff, and there you could add and subtract, and it all made sense. That's not the world we live in. This world is better in most ways, but in that one way, it is more difficult to know how much free space you have. So, oh well. Anyway, I put this item in here. I think this came in today, which is a rarity, because most of these things in Ask ATP are here for months or weeks or whatever. because I just encountered this problem today. And when I saw it, but I didn't quite understand what was going on. I'm like, ah, it's probably just me, who knows, whatever. But then Dan wrote it, and I'm like, no, I'm going to have to file this one because I feel like this might be, well, I should test it in Tahoe first, honestly. This might be another, like, too many windows type thing. So what Dan is talking about, and I think everyone here has noticed, especially, like, developers, oh, yeah, the new Xcode beta came out. So you throw out the old Xcode beta and put in the new one, and then you go to empty trash. And it's like, emptying trash, and it starts counting up files. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 10,000. It's like preparing to empty trash. Wow, I lost a lot of files in these trash because, of course, the Xcode beta.app is filled with just thousands and thousands of files. So it counts up, it counts up, it counts up. Then it goes, okay, now I'm deleting them. And you see this progress bar, and it's like moving along real slow. Like the full progress bar is like 90,000 files or something, and it's like 100. 150, 157. You're like, oh my God, why is this taking so long? Which is why it's been my habit to, you know, command backspace the old Xcode into the trash and then go to the terminal and do rm minus rf very carefully on the, you know, /.trash directory, Xcode.app, and it deletes it so much faster. Rm deletes the Xcode from the trash so much faster than emptying trash does. It's not even funny. I've been doing this for years, but fine, whatever. That's a known issue. Today, what I was doing was refreshing my folder full of favorite images that I use for this Apple screensaver. Apple's photo screensaver has the ability to say, hey, we'll show like an album of photos from your photos library in one of our like floating photos screensavers things. I'm like, great. Could you use my favorites collection in photos? And it says, ha ha ha, you have too many photos. I give up. So cool. Like, okay. Cause it can't handle. I have 200,000 photos, I have maybe 20,000 favorites, and it just doesn't work. So what I do is I export from Apple Photos apps, like not full size, but the quote unquote large size, like it used to be JPEG, but now HEIC compressed images into a folder, just a plain folder on my disk called favorites. It's in user shared photos favorites. And I export all 20,000 photos at a slightly smaller size because they're just going to be shown on the screensaver in the little floating image thing. They're going to be shrunk anyway. And then I point the photo screensaver at that folder and I say, forget about the photo library. You can't handle it. It's too much for you. Just use the photos that are in that folder. But what it means is periodically I have to go and say, okay, last time I exported my favorites, it was this such and such a date. Now I need to select all the favorites from that date on and export those and add them to the folder. So I was doing that today. I exported 1,900 new favorites for the folder, and I exported them into a folder on my desktop. It took a while for photos, but it's got, you know, it's compressing a bunch of RAWs into HEIC or whatever. Like, fine. It fills the folder with 1,900 new photos. They're about a few hundred K each compressed, right? And then I'm like, okay, I got to copy this over to my wife's computer because I have the same setup over there. And so I mount her thing on the desktop and I drag the folder over there. And it's like copying, you know, 1,900 files. And it was going so slow. It was like one, two. I'm like, how many hours is 1,900 seconds? Because it seemed like they're going about one at a second. Like, it was like, what is going on here? What could it possibly be doing? It was still saying estimating time remaining. It never gave me a count, but I feel like it would have been way too long. And I left the room. I'm like, oh, it'll probably be done by the time I go do something. I came back in, and it had progressed like 9% of the way through the progress bar. I'm like, oh, F this. I hit the little X thing and waited. It takes forever to stop, too.
Yeah.
And it just did rsync, like 3 seconds. It was like 3 seconds, which was like, I thought I had typed the command wrong, because I was like, rsync, blah, 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 return. It was like, return, oh, it's on an empty line. Oh, there's my prompt again. I'm like, wait, maybe I typed it wrong. Nope. It copied them all. It was only like a gig of data. It was so fast. So I think there's something terribly, terribly wrong with the Finder when it comes to multi-file operations. Some things, like duplicating huge files, are instant because of the magic of space-saving clones and APFS. Thank you. but, like, what is the Finder doing? It has always been slow in pre-flying, but I have never seen this kind of slowness. This is the kind of slowness that, like, makes me give up and not do it. Like, the speed comparison of emptying the trash with Xcode in it versus RM minus RFing the trash with Xcode in it, that's always been pretty extreme, but both of them get done eventually. But copying less than 2,000 files from one Mac to another in the same room in the house connected by gigabit Ethernet, should never take this long, as evidenced by me doing rsync. And it wasn't doing an rsync where it was like, oh, maybe you already had all the files there, so it didn't have to copy. No, I was rsyncing them into a new empty folder on her desktop, okay? It copied all those files nearly instantly from the command line, and I think it was going to take like 30 minutes to an hour by my estimates. I have no idea what it was doing. Dan, thank you for putting this bee in my butt. If this still happens in Tahoe, I'm going to have to file another one of my you've broken macOS by not accounting for people who have lots of stuff.
Wow, that was a journey I was not expecting. Sam,
I wasn't expecting it until today either.
Sam Hunt writes, how do you think the rise of AI will affect Apple's 2030 goal to make all Apple products carbon neutral? It seems to me that AI will use a lot more power over the lifetime of an Apple device, especially with many tasks being on device. You know, this is a great point, and maybe there's an obvious answer to this that I'm not seeing, but I will say that one of the advantages of Apple being so all in on Apple Silicon is that it is considerably more efficient than most of its peers, like power efficient. And that means it's in some ways slower, but it's also the power use is comparatively quite a bit less, and that is working in their favor. But I don't have a good answer for this, and maybe they just say, oops, doopsies, we're not going to be carbon neutral after all. Or maybe they'll just buy a million of those offsets, which I think we've all decided are kind of BS. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they're not BS, but they're like there's qualities of carbon offsets of how much BS are they? Are they legitimate, or are they totally BS, or are they somewhere in between? But yeah, like I don't think they're going to give up on the 2030 goal. They seem pretty committed to it. AI is not going to help. Let's put it that way. It's going to make their life a lot harder. I think when they came up with this 2030 plan, they didn't expect AI to be what it is now. Remember, they're running stuff server-side with their private cloud compute. I don't know if they're accounting for that as part of their stuff, but as you noted, Casey, they're also running lots of stuff on device, and that's using more of people's energy as well. Maybe if they just put bigger batteries in, I think it's got to hurt them. And I haven't heard them address it directly, but it seems like this 2030 thing is just like, it's really important to the company, and they're just going to make it happen no matter what, including, as you noted, Casey, perhaps buying even more, slightly more shady carbon offsets to claim victory. And there's a story maybe we'll get to in some future episode about, I think it's Germany saying that Apple can't call its devices carbon neutral anymore for reasons that are not yet specified. But yeah, carbon neutrality is difficult to measure, and AI is not helping. And on the topic of AI and being using a lot of energy, there's lots of stuff going around about, you know, how much energy it uses, how much like water it uses, what the environmental impact of all these things, so on and so forth. The reason I'm much more chill about this than I am about Bitcoin, which I think, you know, is a complete waste of energy and resources, is that despite AI using tons of resources, it does do some useful things. And I tried to choose those words carefully. Like, I think Bitcoin does pretty much no useful things, except for crime. But that, again, I don't think that's a thing that
people should be doing. We're going to get so much email. But like, you're not wrong, but we're going to get so much email.
Whatever, but still, like, but AI does some useful things.
Yeah, email us on the blockchain. Yeah, we'll definitely see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
And so, like, we expend energy all the time on things that we find useful. Heating and cooling our homes, all of the data centers that make up the quote-unquote cloud. When we use websites, where are those websites? They're running somewhere in a data center that requires cooling and water and so on and so forth. And yes, I get the argument that, like, hey, well, but AI uses two orders of magnitude more energy per unit time spent by a human. But if it does something useful, historically, we as humans have said, if we're getting use out of something, if there is utility in it, we will continue to refine it and enhance it, and it is essentially worth the energy. Now, it would be great if we could have, in general, better ways to make energy with less carbon pollution, more renewable energy, more solar, so on and so forth, like fusion energy someday when we're all dead. Right? Like, we're always doing that, but like, what I want to see is the energy use, the ways we're finding to generate energy, should be put towards things that are useful to humanity. And obviously, this AI stuff, people argue it's not useful enough to be worth the cost. But I think there's enough useful things in it that we should find a way to expand our energy budget to encompass that in the same way that we have expanded our energy budget to encompass the massive amount of data centers that did not exist before the dawning of the internet and popular culture that do exist now and take huge amounts of energy, because we all find the utility of the internet is worth it. And while we're spending energy there, one would hope that we're taking energy away from other areas, like, you know, electric cars or LED light bulbs or more solar. And like it was a couple of news stories last summer is like, on certain days during the summer, the entirety of California was powered by like renewable energy. Or if you look at the explosion of solar in China, right? Those, you know, what we were talking about before, using like spending the weight gains on giving more battery. We should be making gains in energy generation everywhere, despite our current government trying to stop that as hard as they possibly can because it's filled with idiots. And we should be spending those gains on new useful things that we otherwise would not be able to do because we use energy. Now, none of this helps Apple with the 2030 goals, to be clear, because their whole thing is carbon neutral within the realm of one device. They're not looking at the whole globe. So they've got their work cut out for them. But my stance on AI and energy use is if it's a use, if it's doing useful things for us, we should find a way to power it. If it's not doing anything useful except for allowing people to commit crimes, then maybe we should not allow it.
Yeah, I think also, you know, AI is a new way for devices to use a bunch of processing power to try to be smart for us. This is not the first way we've done this. It's just the most recent and, you know, maybe most intensive. But even before these new AI, you know, tools that Apple's building into their software to run locally, even before all that, we were using ML. We were using machine learning. We were using, you know, other forms of heavy computation to analyze stuff on your phone to do things for you to try to be smart.
Don't forget the GUI. When the GUI was introduced, you're like, you're using all your computing power to show pretty pictures. What a waste. And again, it wasn't at the same scale as AI. I get that. It's a difference. It's a significant difference in scale. I totally get that. But the GUI was slammed for exactly the same. And it's true. How much of the computing power on the original Macintosh is dedicated to the GUI versus, quote unquote, doing actual stuff? It's like 90% powering the GUI.
Yeah. We got several of these emails, too, about Liquid Glass, which on the one side, I'm like, come on. But on the other side, well,
I mean, when you're talking about it, it doesn't help. Yeah, like when you're talking about something on the scale of the iPhone, everything matters. You know, like when you're talking about like, all right, try to offset the energy use or try to you know provide it via renewable means for billions of devices out there. Like, yeah, that's going to be hard. Like that's not a small problem, and every little bit helps. Even something like using plug-in wire charging instead of wireless charging because it's more efficient. Like that. That can help a ton too. There's all sorts of things like that can help. You know, having every new iPhone, despite being migrated over from an old iPhone, reset the screen dimming behavior so it dims like 4 seconds after you stop touching it every single time you change phones. Like that's not an accident. Apple does that because it helps them in various ways. It probably helps their, their green initiative. It definitely helps the perception of the battery life of their phones. So it helps them in lots of ways, and I guarantee you that's why that's always been the case. But everything matters. But where AI is starting from is not the phone was sitting around doing nothing. They've already accounted for the phone having background processing for things like photo indexing and, you know, deciding when to run certain tasks and analyzing the power usage. Like there's already been lots of those background tasks on phones. So I don't think having AI used, honestly, reasonably sparingly for not that many features, I don't think that's going to be massively different from any other, you know, new feature, new application they've added to the phones over time. It might be. I could be wrong. But again, they're not coming from nothing here. So it's not like they all of a sudden have to offset like everything.
Like the easy way to think about this on device is, look, the batteries in our phone are not getting astronomically larger. So it's pretty clear that the additional battery drain from Apple Intelligence stuff is not that big. Because if it was, our battery life would be destroyed. Because the battery size increase that came along with the advent of Apple Intelligence was not significant, and yet we're all using our phones with Apple Intelligence on it, and it's not that bad. It could get worse in the future, but like they're going to be limited by how much energy can you put in a battery on a phone, and until there's some kind of breakthrough, there's not going to be this huge difference. Now, the server side is where there's the biggest problem. This is what most people are complaining about, to be fair, because in a data center, you want higher utilization. Like you don't want things sitting idle. If you have some server that's running AI stuff in a data center, in general, you want that hardware to be optimally utilized, as in whatever like 80% usage or whatever you think is the sweet spot between like heat generation and whatever. You don't want it to be idle, okay? And it is true that doing anything in AI can take orders of magnitude more power than doing the same thing non-AI. So, for example, doing a Google search in the pre-AI days versus doing anything with ChatGPT. Both things may respond to you within a second, right? But you spent 10, 100, 1,000 times more energy doing the ChatGPT answer than you did doing the Google query. And if that you spread that across an entire data center that used to be doing simple, you know, simple queries, doing like something for iCloud Drive or something that doesn't require a lot of computation, and you have an equally sized data center that is now doing AI stuff at orders of magnitude more energy, that's where you start to see all these horror stories about like, look how much more energy he's using or whatever. But that it, like, it's concentrated in one place. On device is not going to be like that again, unless we have some kind of breakthrough in battery power, because it just can't be. You can't use 10, 100, or 1,000 times more energy from your phone. The battery will last, you know, an hour, and the phone will not be satisfactory. So I wouldn't worry about on-device in terms of, like, we're destroying the environment, although I'll see Marco's thing of, like, yeah, but every little bit multiplied by a billion does add up. But it is a problem for Apple for the 2030 goals, but I don't think it's a problem for humanity. The data centers may be a problem for humanity, but again, see previous week where we were talking about ChatGPT-5 and OpenAI suddenly getting kind of interested in being able to do inference more cost-effectively, because all that energy costs money, you know, and so this, I feel like we're burning a lot of energy on the early days of AI, and hopefully we will get better at this. We will get better at doing AI at about the same speed as we use more and more energy with AI. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about the energy use impact of AI, as provided we continue on our current accelerating path towards less carbon generation from creating electricity, which again, our country is fighting against because we're bad, but the rest of the world is marching forward on.
Yeah, and hopefully we won't be bad forever.
Yes.
All right. Thank you to our sponsors this week, Delete Me and Sentry. And thanks to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atp.fm/join. One of the many perks of ATP membership is ATP Overtime, our weekly bonus topic. This week on Overtime, we're going to be talking about a rumored 5-year roadmap for Apple's vision and smart glasses products. So this could be really interesting. You can hear that and more by joining atp.fm/join. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
I think political in the after show, but just before we came on the air, I saw Jeff Atwood post that he'd saw one of those new electric mail trucks. What did he say about it? He said, a friend sent me this photo from a walk, and it's a nice reminder of progress, showing one of the incredibly ugly but still electric new mail trucks. I didn't want to be that guy, but sometimes it's my turn to be that guy, so I had to reply to him with a link to a story from August 17th that says the current administration is trying to make a U-turn on the federal commitment to electric vehicles for the Postal Service, because electricity is bad and we should not have electric vehicles and we should go back to diesel or whatever the hell. So there is nothing that is good in this world that our current government will not try to put a stop to and reverse. Yeah. Sorry for that pessimism, but it really it's difficult over here. It's not just liquid glass.
Yeah, well, we're in a bad place and it's getting worse, and it's going to take a lot of time and a lot to clean up, but I do think we will eventually clean it up. It's hard to see a way out right now, but
and that's the thing. And the Democrats are just, as far as I can tell, they're just sitting there.
They'll die too.
Well, in all fairness, that's what the Democrats do best, is they just sit there. Like, that, they're great at that. Believe me, I'm not a huge fan of the Democrats in absolute terms. They're just, you know, the only functioning government and, you know, governing
party. There's some
good
ones out there. They're just not in charge. So, you
right,
know,
exactly.
Hopefully there'll be some kind of turnover and eventually things will get better. But it just boggles my mind that this is all kind of centralized around. Well, on my vacation, I got to see the big wind turbine blades. I taken pictures of them a few years running now. They're all set up in like New London and being taken out to the water to be set up. And those wind turbine farms were also stopped by the government because electricity through wind is bad, kills the whales or something. I don't know. Anyway, like, it's just like, we can't, it's just so frustrating to see things that were like put in motion, paid for, nearly completed, and someone comes out and says, no, we don't want electric cars. We don't want electric mail trucks. We don't want wind turbines. We don't want any of that. We need to go back to coal. And it's just like, oh my God, what? And then I have to update the liquid glass too on top of that. I didn't give, by the way, to get this back on Tech Topics, I didn't give my liquid glass thing because you guys were going on for a while at the beginning, but like
us.
My plan was always for Tahoe, as I just have Mac apps. My plan was always not to change any of my UIs like you guys were planning on doing, like not to liquid glassify them, to use the new controls or whatever, but to simply make my existing apps look and work more or less how they do now with liquid glass. I wasn't going to use the UI fallback, whatever that is, like UI compatibility, blah, blah, blah. I was going to compile in the new SDK. I was going to use any new APIs that are available, add features as appropriate, like added the new glass material to switch glass because, you know, it's liquid glass. Makes sense, right? But I wasn't going to like, oh, now I'm going to add a toolbar and I'm going to use a search thing. I wasn't going to do any of that. And just doing that, doing essentially no UI changes, just make it work with liquid glass, I feel like I'm barely going to make it by the skin of my teeth. And my apps are simple. And so Casey's like, yeah, last week I looked into changing call sheet. I'm like, what? That you started so late, Casey.
No, I did.
You started way too late. I started the day after WWDC, banging my head against these five dinky apps, and every beta that comes out, like Marco said, every beta that comes out, I go back through my screens like, well, they broke this. Oh, here, this is broken in a new way. I've never seen that before. What the hell is this? I don't even have time to file the bugs anymore. Like, they're breaking things in ways that I can't even understand how they're breaking. They're breaking things in ways that are making me go back to my Sequoia versions, like the versions that are on the App Store, and say, was this always broken? I'm like, no, it works fine in Sequoia, and it's 100% broken in like code that I did not change, that has not changed in any way, that used to work and now doesn't anymore. And I'm like, I don't even know how to file this as a feedback request. It's just... it's exhausting, and I'm doing nothing. I'm doing absolutely nothing. It should just be like, it looks the same as it always did, right? That should have been no work for you. And it's like, no, I've been working on it every single day since WWDC. So I feel for you guys, but like, yeah, I think this is going to be it's making me fearful of upgrading my other devices to like, because I'll have to deal with everyone else's app. And like you guys said, it's not their fault. It's not the developer's fault that these apps don't work. Apple's just breaking stuff. And regardless of the whole, like, oh, well, they usually only have 8 betas, and that's probably the last one. Like, that's not what we should be worried about. We should worry about the calendar. The event is on September 9th. Like, there's a deadline. Like, they're going to ship these phones. Then, yeah, the pizza box things updates the OS. Either way, like, whatever OS is ready to go on the little pizza box things in the Apple stores on, like, September 15th, like, that's what we're getting.
Yeah. I mean, this is, like, you know, you say, like, you're out of time to file bugs. It wouldn't matter. It's too late. Like, whatever.
Oh, yeah, no, it's too late, but, like, I'm having things that are breaking that are, like, I need this to be fixed within the next year, please. Otherwise, like, people are like, hey, why is your app broken? I'm like, Tahoe broke it. I don't know. I don't know why it doesn't work. It's the same damn code. I can't fix it.
Yeah, like, any, at this point, like, any significant bug that you still see will be lucky if it's fixed in 26.1. It might even be like 26.2.
I'm gonna be lucky if these are fixed 2 years from now. Like, it's the type of thing, like, some bugs that I, like, fought with and, like, you know, like graphical glitches. Like, you're talking about graphical glitches. It's even more some macOS because I have like an AppKit window that has a NS hosting view inside it with a Swift UI view, and like the way literal windows on macOS interact with the views that have Swift UI views inside them when those things resize, and how they like the timing between the AppKit window resizing versus a Swift UI thing resizing being slightly off and stuff. And that behavior is 100% changed, and it's changed in a way that I can't get it to look right in Tahoe, period, no matter what I do. But it works fine using my existing code on the old OS. And it's like, I don't even know how to file that. Like, that's never going to be fixed. My app is just going to be janky from now on until Apple does something to magically fix it. I did file a bunch of bugs on this years ago, and they never got fixed. And I just found workarounds. I guess I'll just have to try to find workarounds in Tahoe. But, like, I spent the past week trying to find workarounds for, like, window resizing, view resizing jank in Tahoe. And I could not find a way to make it not janky. So guess what? It's going to be janky in Tahoe. Not great.
Yeah.
It's not great, Bob.
We're in for a rough fall, and you know, and you're right, like on the Mac, your odds of getting bugs fixed are much lower and take much longer timelines. You know, we're lucky here in iOS land, me and Casey, like, we're lucky that, like, iOS bugs do tend to get fixed significantly faster.
Yeah, because there'll be some important app, like, you know, like Netflix or Facebook, or I don't know, some app that Apple cares about will have the bug and they'll fix it. But that's why I'm saying my timelines are years. Like, will this be fixed in the next two major releases?
If and with Mac bugs, it's years, if ever. Like, many Mac bugs are just never fixed, and we just have to deal with it.
Yeah, they just become irrelevant because, like, the thing that you had the bug in goes away. Like, so much stuff in macOS went away. Like, there are things, like, there are constants and appearances and settings that just simply do nothing now because Liquid Glass has no concept of that thing. And so you could just change these attributes, and it's like, no, it doesn't change anything about it because that whole thing's gone. And that's happened for years. Like, you remember all the brush metal stuff? All that stuff's still in macOS, and you can set it, but you're never going to see brush metal, obviously, right? Yeah. And so if you had any bugs about the brush metal appearance, they're all fixed because those attributes do nothing now.
Gracious. It's not fun out there, y'all. It's not fun out there. But you know what? In a couple of weeks, we're going to be able to be distracted by consumerism, which I know is not great, but I feel like all three of us need a little distraction.
Put it this way. The AirPods Pro 3, which I know you're looking forward to, there's no visible UI on them. So they'll either work or they won't, but you won't have to look at any screenshots, and no one will have to write software that morphs some button into some other thing or whatever.
Yeah, the AirPods are still delightful. They're still an amazing product. I can't wait to see what the 3s bring, because the 2s have been so great for me. I'm very much looking forward to the Air. And we didn't even mention, too, like, you know, there's also most likely new Apple Watches coming out.
Yeah,
we don't
Apple
know
Watch
that's
Ultra
be.
3, although I think that's a good look just like the 2, but still.
Yeah, probably. But still, like, you know, there's a lot to look forward to for consumerism. And yeah, it is consumerism, but you know what? In the world we live in right now, especially as Americans, we could use some distracting, fun, fluffy stuff. Like, we could really use it. So, you know, I know it's not the best thing in the world to buy phones that you don't need. Yeah, but you know what? Look around our country. We can, like, have a drink, which is not super healthy, or we can buy a new iPhone. You know, whatever we need to cope at this point. You know, do what you got to do.
Just give your old phones to your kids, you know, try to keep that e-waste out of there, pass it on to someone who can't afford to get a new phone, and we'll still be doing a net good, sort of.
Kind of. Titles! Let's do some titles. Either my stuff, or oh, there just weren't very many titles this week, huh?
We weren't funny enough.
I guess not. A post-final
it's
gotta
be athletically engaged.
What was that about?
That was the person
Apple
who's,
watch
the watch was activating during activities.
Right, yes.
That's pretty good.
I'm not against it.
It's as close as you're going to get to ever having a double entendre.
Oh, okay, then.
Title,
yeah, yep, okay,
so,
fine.
Yeah,
that's
you
got to
jump on this
sold.
One.
Yep, that's sold. It's happening. It's happening. You're right. I didn't think about the gift you've just given me. My apologies.
It's right. Because it's what do you call it? It's so far away from being crude. It sounds like, you know, elevated and classy, athletically engaged until Casey reads the email, the message, and then it's less so. But,
yeah.
Which, sort of speaking of, should you put, like, a PG-13 warning? I know that doesn't translate to everyone.
No, it's
but...
fine.
No,
kids,
I'm
kids
saying,
would,
like...
Kids would hear that segment and not understand what we're talking about.
All right.
There's a lot worse
being a kid,
than that.
All the you watch old movies that you saw when you were a kid, and you never realize all the sexual innuendo was in them. It just goes right over your head.
In your endo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you not seen Scrubs?
Was a store, I think it's in the Massachusetts area, Innuendo. It's like they sell blinds instead of innuendo. It's innuendo. I think that's a real thing. Let me look it up.
I saw there was a something breeze past on Instagram, and it was like a picture of a liquor store that's called Liquor Store Near Me.
Like, yeah, I did see that. It looked like it might have been fake, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, is this AI? Like, that's what I thought. I'm like,
it doesn't have to be AI. It could just be Photoshop. It was just text.
And the thing is, too, it's like, you know what? Even if it is AI, it's funny. That's all I needed from it. I smiled. Like, yep. That's it. It did its job.
Yeah, it's a real thing. INNUWINDOW.com. Innuendo.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I don't even know what to do with that. All right. Next week, we are normal time, though there will be a little mini silly season in a couple of weeks. But for next week, we will see you on Wednesday the 3rd.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And yeah, see you then.